And last time we'd gotten down in this 11th chapter through the 10th verse. And we spent a considerable amount of time discussing and applying the prophecy up through this 10th verse. And so we'll not discuss that particular point tonight. But the gist of this prophecy is the time in which this rod comes out of the stem of Jesse and this branch shall grow out of his roots. This is the time of the Savior, the Messiah. And he describes a time of great peace in this kingdom. Whenever the wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and the little child shall lead them. And most people don't understand that the time of this prophecy has to do with the coming of the Messiah and the kingdom age. And as we get down to the 10th verse, and in that day there shall be a root of Jesse, which shall stand for an ensign of the people, and to it shall the Gentiles seek, and his rest shall be glorious. We discovered that Romans 15 quotes from this prophecy and shows that it was being fulfilled during the very time that Paul wrote the letter to the Romans. So we know that we're not looking for a time after Christ's second coming for this to be fulfilled. We know that it wasn't completely fulfilled back when the Jews came back out of the captivity, but it was being fulfilled during the time of the church age. And that's the point that we'd gotten to last time. Now, beginning with the 11th verse of the 11th chapter, still talking about the same time, the same prophecy, and it seems that this part of the prophecy, even more so, could only have taken place at the time of the Messiah. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people. Now, the first time, of course, if we know what the first time is, then we'll know what the second time is. The first time could be one of two times. The first time could be when he led them out of the land of Egypt into the wilderness. That could have been the first time he recovered his people. And if so, then the second time would be when they came out of the captivity of Babylon back to the land of Israel. However, if the first time is coming out of the captivity, then the second time would be when he set up the kingdom of heaven and invited then all nations to participate in it. But it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people. Probably the second time here is coming out of the captivity. But this prophecy has a double fulfillment. The coming out of Babylon, and then the second fulfillment is in the New Testament age, the coming out of the world into the church. Which shall be left? Then he names these nations. From Assyria, and from Egypt, and from Pathros, and from Cush, and from Elam, and from Shinar, and from Hamath, and from the islands of the sea. Now, as we look into each one of these nations that he names here, there's some of them we don't know very much about, and I tried to find them in the dictionary and get a little bit of a meaning from each one of them. Assyria, of course, was the great nation that was attached to Babylon that did take them into captivity. Assyria carried Israel into captivity, and it was a part of the power that was could be said to have carried Judah into captivity also. And from Egypt. Of course, we know about Egypt, how that the people were in captivity at one time in Egypt, and how that Egypt is always regarded as an enemy of God's people. And from Pathros. Pathros is a place in upper Egypt, still a part of Egypt, but it's a different section. And from Cush. Cush is the country of Ethiopia, and Cush was the grandson of, I believe it was Ham. There were people in captivity in that area. And from Elam, The Elamites were descendants of Shem, and the capital of Elam was this city of Susiana, and it was down south of Assyria. And from Shinar is another name from Babylonia, another name for Babylonia or Chaldea itself. And from Hamath, and Hamath is really a city of Upper Syria on the Orontes River. And from the islands of the sea. Now, the islands of the sea, another translation says the land surrounded by the sea. And this is thought by many of the commentators to mean the Roman Empire and its vast scattered reaches. So we see here God is going to gather people from all of these areas of the world. He's going to gather the Hebrew people from all these areas. And so in the greater fulfillment of this, it would certainly be appropriate to think of it as a time in which the Jews do return to God, in which all Israel will be saved, the time after the fullness of the Gentiles has come in, and certainly then a bulk of the church is composed of Jewish people, but from all of these areas of the world, and really this would include the whole world. And he shall set up an ensign for the nations, and shall assemble the outcasts of Israel, and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. Now, this is another illustration here of what he's going to do. He'll set up this ensign for the nations, that is, he'll set up this sign of his kingdom for all the nations, and there shall assemble the outcasts of Israel. Now, if we today could come under the classification of spiritual Israel, then that would include us. And gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. And as we look at the true nature of the church today, we see that it actually does include people from any place in the world. There is no place in the world that you get out from under the jurisdiction of the church. The envy also of Ephraim shall depart, and the adversaries of Judah shall be cut off. Ephraim shall not envy Judah, and Judah shall not vex Ephraim. Now, Ephraim is another name for Israel. And there was a lot of antagonism. There was a lot of vexation. There was a lot of envy between these two nations, the northern and the southern kingdoms. But he says at that time, this envy is going to be done away with. Well, we can see how that the time of the church, the time in which there would be peace for all of God's people, that any in the church would no longer have any antagonisms. This is the time when the wolf is going to dwell with the lamb, and when the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling are going to eat together, and a little child shall lead them, remember. So there won't be the envyings and the jealousies, and so he clarifies one more point here. This enmity between Judah and Israel will be done away too in that place and at that time. But they shall fly upon the shoulders of the Philistines toward the west. They shall spoil them of the east together. They shall lay their hand upon Edom and Moab, and the children of Ammon shall obey them. Now this depicts Israel and Judah being in a victorious position over their ancient, perpetual enemies, the Philistines, and the Edomites, and the Moabites, and the Ammonites, which surrounded these nations. And this shows them in victory over them. Whether this is meant to be a literal victory in a battle, or whether this is meant to be a spiritual victory over spiritual enemies of God's people, it's hard for me to say. Then he goes on in the figure now, verse 15, and the Lord shall utterly destroy the tongue of the Egyptian sea. And this tongue of the Egyptian sea is certainly an appropriate word for the Red Sea that was this sea in Egypt that they escaped through. And with his mighty hand shall he with his mighty wind shall he shake his hand over the river. Now some think the river here would be the Nile River, but others think that the river is the Euphrates River. And shall smite it in the seven streams and make men go over dry shod. Now, to smite it in the seven streams would be really to make this mighty river dry up so that it would be just seven small streams that would be fordable. Streams that a person could go across and not even get wet. And of course, if he's talking about the Euphrates River, it would be symbolic of his people's escape from their captivity by the Babylonians and the Assyrians. So they should go over dry shod. And this word dry shod is translated in the American version as with sandals on. Now we have a picture of this in Exodus 14, verses 21 through 31. And let's turn to that and read it just a moment. Because that's definitely what this is referring to. Exodus 14, verse 21 through 31. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. Now this is where we have the allusion there to God using the wind and his hand dry up the land. Dry up the sea. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. And the Egyptians pursued, went in after them to the midst of the sea, even all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And it came to pass that in the morning watch the Lord looked unto the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of the cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptians. And they took off the chariot wheels, that they drave them heavily, so that the Egyptians said, Let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fighteth for them and against the Egyptians. And the Lord said unto Moses, Stretch out thine hand over the sea, that the waters may come again upon the Egyptians, and upon the chariots, and upon their horsemen. And Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to his strength when the morning appeared, and the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. And the waters returned, and covered the chariots, and the horsemen, and all the host of Pharaoh, that came into the sea after them, and there remained not so much as one of them. But the children of Israel walked upon dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore, and Israel saw that great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians, and the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. So there was a great amount of reverential awe and respect on the part of these Israelites when they saw what God had done, this great work that he'd done. So Isaiah is referring to that in his prophecy now, as he again talks about the loosing of God's people from a bondage. So they shall go over dry shod, and there shall be a highway for the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria, like as it was to Israel in the day when he came up out of the land of Egypt. So there's going to be a way prepared for these people to go now on a highway, he says, that'll come from Assyria. That's where they were in captivity. They'll be able to come out on what he describes as a highway, like as it was to Israel in the day that he came up out of the land of Egypt. Now, how was it when they came up out of the land of Egypt? This verse 29 of Exodus 14. But the children of Israel walked upon dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. So they didn't have to even wade in the mud or walk on slick, miry clay, but they were able to walk on dry land. A road was prepared for them. And here he says the same would be true for his people as they came out of the bondage of the Chaldeans and the Assyrians. Now, as we look at this prophecy and think about it applying into the church or kingdom age, we're reminded about the highway. We're reminded as to the work of John the Baptist. John the Baptist was to prepare the way of the Lord. He was to make his path straight. He was to dig down the mountains, and he was to fill in the valleys and make a road for the Lord, as he prepared the way for the kingdom. And as we think of what John the Baptist did, he dug down the high and mighty and haughty, and he brought up the lowly and humbled, and he straightened out the crooked, however you would want to look upon the work of John the Baptist, it was preparing this road, which I believe there are we can allude today to our traveling this same road as we come to the kingdom. Now, in this 12th chapter,